Welcome to All Sides with Ann Fisher. Speaker of the House John Boehner complains yesterday that the problem with immigration reform is that the president has no plan. The president apparently begs to differ. There is a plan, he said recently.
But if you're actually serious and sincere about fixing a broken system, this is the vehicle to do it. And now's the time to get it done. There is no good reason to play procedural games or engage in obstruction just to block the best chance we've had in years to address this problem in a way that's fair to middle-class families, to business owners, to legal immigrants.
Joining us now to talk about whether there's any seriousness or sincerity in Washington these days is NPR's political junkie Ken Rudin. Welcome to the show, Ken.
Thank you, Ann. If there's anybody to talk about seriousness in Washington, I'm the guy.
I knew it. It's your middle name.
Yeah, well, it's actually Elliot.
Ken Rudin's joining us. I think this is probably your last time before the last Political Junkie show.
The last Political Junkie is next Wednesday, the 26th. It was a very, very emotional moment for moments for us lately. Yesterday was the penultimate show.
Right.
Next week is the final show.
So it's your last scuttle.
My last scuttle button puzzle
right.
is up now. Yeah,
right.
I never know what to wear for the last show on the radio. It's I don't know.
Well, you're obviously not televised like I am.
No, that's why I've seen you. I've seen you.
They
yeah.
just say,
yeah.
make sure you have eyebrows. So that's the main thing. So poking over that microphone. Next week's the last Political Junkie show. We're lucky enough to have you this week. Thanks so much for joining us again.
I love being on your show.
So back to that seriousness and sincerity in Washington thing. The speaker has said that he won't put that immigration reform bill that went through the Senate. They won't put anything up on the floor unless a majority of Republicans in the House support it. And what are the odds of that?
Well, right now, they're not good at all. Of course, we're skipping over the fact what the Senate is doing, but let's just stick with Hastert for a second. I mean, Hastert, it's the Hastert rule. Let's
yeah.
stick with John Boehner for a second. Boehner said that, as you say, he would not let the legislation get on the House floor without a majority of Republicans supporting it. And the reason he's saying that, there are a lot of conservatives, and Dana Rohrabacher of Southern California said this week, that if Boehner forces this on us, he's gone. There's going to be a palace coup. We're going to get rid of him. And two, in the past several months, there was aid to Hurricane Sandy, and there was a Violence Against Women Act. Both measures passed the House, but not with a majority of Republican support. It was passed with basically Democratic support, and there are a lot of Tea Party and conservative Republicans say that's not the way the speaker should be bringing stuff to the floor.
In a bipartisan way.
Well, I mean, just as Harry Reid controls what's going on the Senate side, and for example, the House just passed a very restrictive abortion bill on Tuesday, and Harry Reid is obviously going to ignore it. I mean, because as majority leader, he can do that. But I mean, we still have to deal with what's going on in the Senate with immigration. And you know, once upon a time, the Gang of Eight seemed to be moving towards some kind of a deal, a compromise between border security and the a vehicle for allowing the 11 million people who are here illegally a path to citizenship. But there's more and more pressure from conservatives. Jeff Sessions, the leading judiciary senator from Alabama, is doing everything he can to block it. There are at least 60 amendments, or there are 200 amendments, what am I saying? And they all need 60 votes to pass. Harry Reid really wants this done by the July 4th break. It's very, very questionable whether he can make that happen.
My guest once again, Ken Rudin, NPR's political junkie. If you have a question or comment for Ken, just want to say hey, give us a call, 614-292-8513. I usually don't. We don't go this way, but if anyone has a question for Ken just about what he does and what he's going to do, we'll be talking about that later, too. Give us a call, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. Okay, so is this the deal? The conservative Republicans, that ilk, they don't want anything to pass?
Well, first of all, you say that ilk. I mean,
well,
that
who's
ilk
ever
is,
holding
that's
it up?
The majority of the Republicans,
yeah, right,
on the conservatives.
Right.
But no, what they really want is some of them have to know that getting nearly shut out by Latino voters, as we saw in 2012, is is just suicide for the party. But there are also many conservatives who say, well, look, that's all well and good, and we want everybody to, you know, be productive citizens. But at the same time, it's the poorest border. Now, some statistics show that it's not as porous as it used to be. Mm-hmm. But John Cornyn, the number two Republican in the Senate, has proposed an amendment that basically would tighten border security, and it would basically for people, before anybody could be a naturalized citizen or the path to citizenship, those 11 million people here illegally, that can't happen until for 5 years when they test to see if the border really is secure. So the Republicans are saying the story is really about border security. The Democrats want obviously a much more comprehensive bill, but right now, when you need 60 votes to go to the bathroom in the Senate, Cornyn's amendment is what may be, the stumbling block for Democrats.
All right. And if it's 5 years, if they put that limit on it or that time frame into it, then you're into another presidential cycle easily.
Oh, you're right. And right away, as it is, even without the Cornyn amendment, we're talking about 8 to 9 years. So, tack on 4 or 5 more years. It just keeps pushing and pushing it off. And, people like Ted Cruz of Texas, which is interesting because Texas, while it is the most populous Republican state, it's not going to be Republican forever, and I'm sure Republicans know that, given the changing demographics in the state. Mm-hmm. But both Cruz and Cornyn in Texas are just pushing, border security. Look, there are a lot of people crossing the border illegally, and we know that. And I think I saw a study that showed that there's been an uptick in recent months compared to what it had been. But still, the Democrats are so afraid that if they're going to make it all about border security, that then many Democrats may not vote for it. And so it may not even get to the House for John Boehner to worry about.
The IRS scandal, the scandal of the IRS employees tagging as Tea Party submissions for 501c3
tax exemption
is continuing to simmer away in the House. We don't hear much about it right now, but there have been surveys and that polls done now, and it looks like the latest one shows Americans thinking that maybe the White House did have something to do with it, even as the information comes out in congressional investigations that the White House probably had nothing to do with it.
Well, let's put it this, let's be even more fair. Let's say we don't know if the White House had anything to do with it. But you're absolutely correct about what polls are showing, that they think that the White House and President Obama had a hand in it from day one, that their role, the White House's role, was out to just, stymie the conservative groups, the Tea Party groups that came to the forefront in 2009, interestingly, just, shortly after President Obama took office. But the polls do show this. And, of course, I mean, it's one thing to say that, there are a lot of questions about the IRS that need to be answered. There's a lot of questions to say, Benghazi was awful, the tragic killings in Libya, that was terrible. But to just say that the president was involved, the president did this, we don't know it. So, of course, all the comparisons to Watergate and Nixon, which are all over the place, I mean— there are questions that have not been answered, but certainly there's no evidence that shows or even suggests that the White House knew about this or was part of this conspiracy.
There's been a lot of discussion about the IRS agents' tin ears. I mean, that they didn't even think that this would, they didn't even occur to them that this kind of jargon inside the office would create any kind of problem.
Well, I suspect that the IRS, I mean, I can't speak for everybody, of course, but I suspect that the IRS don't think of themselves as political people, and thus they don't think, it doesn't occur to them whether they have a political tin ear or not. I think they just feel that, well, this looks strange, or let me investigate this. But of course, you do have a White House that is very politically aware and very, as we saw with Benghazi, with the talking points and things like that. So, but as for the individual agents, it's hard to make the case that it's a conspiracy against the right, because of course some left-wing groups have also been gone through these questionnaires. But even if it is, it just feels like the thought of having a political tin ear, they didn't come up in the world of politics for the most of them, so they don't react or think that way.
And then there's the issue of them lacking really clear direction on these kinds of requests.
Well, that's true, too. And I think that's what I think perhaps that's what got President Obama the angriest when he, you know, dismissed the acting IRS commissioner because there's just no leadership coming from. Now, of course, the IRS is supposed to be independent of the White House. It's not a political organization. Certainly, it's not run by the White House. But, you know, when you take the oath of office on that January 20th or January 21st, as it turned out last time, you are responsible for what happens in the government. And I think that's probably if it doesn't make Obama furious, it certainly makes him frustrated.
Okay, and then the NSA scandal. It seems like 6 months ago there was nothing.
Well, you know, I mean, that's true. We always talk about maybe there really is a second term curse in the presidency. Mm-hmm. And we could talk about that too. But the NSA, I mean, of course, everybody's saying, well, we knew that the government spies on us. We assume the government has been watching all all what we do, but conservatives have been saying this for years. And of course, when the Tea Party talked about the IRS and the NSA and everybody, you know, spying on people, they were just dismissed as crackpots and paranoids. But I mean, you know, it is far more widespread than anybody thought. And I think it's just fascinating to see, especially with the case with Edward Snowden, the guy who's now ostensibly hiding out in Hong Kong, mm-hmm. and the release of those secrets. It's interesting that, you know, Democrats and Republicans alike in Congress, the House and the Senate, they're calling him a traitor. They're calling him an act of treason. He should be, you know, locked up for the rest of his life. While libertarians of the right and people pretty far to the left say this is wrong. Snowden is not the enemy. He's a hero. And it just shows that big government is running amok. And Snowden is one of the people who called attention to it.
Yeah, you talk about strange bedfellows, and there's lots of like chatter around Rand Paul that he's kind of, people are glomming on to him now. They're getting what he's been saying. He's not quite as far to the right or libertarian as his father, Ron Paul, but, you know, he's out there and is getting a little mileage from this.
Well, I think part of it may be, I mean, Ron Paul, it's hard to even make the case that Ron Paul was far to the right because some of his you think of far right, and you also think of foreign policy, and their policy was not far right. But
but
Rand Paul also, while Ron Paul did run for president 3 times, Ron Paul never expected to be president, certainly not the Republican nominee for president. And Rand Paul apparently has this calculation that, well, one, I do want to get in my father's footsteps, take the libertarian mantle and run for president, but he's also by, you know, reaching out to establishment Republicans at the same time. So he's really a guy to watch. And it's interesting that the leaders, the so-called leaders of the Republicans in the Senate, such as Mitch McConnell and John Cornyn, they seem to be petrified of, one, a challenge from the right wing in the primary, and two, being dismissed, you know, as not part of the real party. So they seem to be taking the cue from the Ted Cruz's, the Ron Paul's, the Mike Lee of Utah of the world, rather than be the leaders themselves.
My guest is Ken Rudin, NPR's political junkie. Doesn't anybody out there want to talk to Ken?
Wow, no calls at all. Wow.
I know, but, you know, in a way it's okay, but if they,
You know what I could do? I could call the NSA and see, is anybody trying to call me? And then I could find out.
There you go. Always thinking, always on your toes. Ken Rudin, NPR's political junkie, is with him. If you have a question or comment for Ken about politics or about Ken himself and his future, give us a call, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. You can also check out our Facebook page, post your question or comment there. We'll be right back. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.
Support comes from the Homeport Noble on Long condominiums, offering home ownership opportunities in the King Lincoln District, featuring green design buildings within walking distance of local stores and restaurants. Details at homeportohio.org/NOBO on Long.
You're mobile, and we are too. 89.7 NPR News is now available anytime, anywhere with the WOSU Public Media mobile app. Get your headlines on demand, listen to live streaming of 89.7, and hear your favorite podcasts like All Sides with Ann Fisher, Morning Edition, and All Things Considered. It's free and available for iPhone, iPad, and Android devices. Go to wosu.org/mobile app and download the app today.
Support 89.7 NPR News at $85 and receive the WOSU member card. Good for discounts at more than 200 partners. Visit wosu.org/member card.
Welcome back to All Sides with Ann Fisher. We put out the call, and you made your calls, and our screener is getting to you ASAP. My guest is Ken Rudin, NPR's political junkie. They heard us. They're calling, Ken.
Collect?
I don't know. Good question.
Yeah, it's a good question.
Well, they're public radio listeners. I don't know. I don't know.
They are how the best.
The president yesterday in Berlin revived an early goal in his presidency by calling for a reduction in the number of deployed U.S. strategic nuclear warheads. I don't know what the difference between strategic and non-strategic deployed warheads are, but by reducing them by one-third, that is if Russia agrees to a similar cut. Let's listen.
After a comprehensive review, I've determined that we can ensure the security of America and our allies and maintain a strong and credible strategic deterrent while reducing our deployed strategic nuclear weapons by up to one-third. And I intend to seek negotiated cuts with Russia to move beyond Cold War nuclear postures.
All right. Does that get your blood running hot or cold or neither when it comes to politics? I mean, a few years back when he was there, it was hundreds of thousands of people, and now it was a select group, a couple thousand, and...
Well, you know, everything is a scandal now. You remember there was Watergate, there was Filegate, all those things. Now they're calling this Brandenburg Gate. I don't know what that means, but okay, I thought I'd try that joke out. But anyway,
I don't know why I laugh. I laugh at everything you say.
As you should. It clearly, like 5 years ago when you had 200,000 people, huge crowds, but Obama was more of a promise back then more than reality. Right now they know that there's still, you know, the people, the Europeans who despise President Bush because of his war on terror and you know all the things that he was doing, and then the war in Iraq, the war on terror, and now you have a president who is, you know, sending out drones. You know, I mean, this is the left's argument that sending drones, killing, you know, often killing innocent people. They're spying on allies, let alone the enemies, whatever the enemies mean. But I mean, they're spying on Germany. They're spying on erstwhile allies. So. If you notice, if you look at the pictures, it was interesting to see the pictures of President Obama with Angela Merkel, with Vladimir Putin. They don't seem like it's their best buddies. I don't think they're Facebook friends, shall we say. I don't think it's like that at all. They seem to they swooned for him 4 years, 5 years ago. But you know, reality has a weird way of setting in, and they just feel that. They're not so impressed. So a speech, you know, like that, you know, 5 years ago would headline every broadcast and newspaper in the country. And now it's just like it's ho-hum.
Matt in Lancaster, you're on the air. Welcome to the show, Matt.
Hello. Thank you for taking my call.
You're welcome.
I have a question. I just want to know why American politics, especially, but not just American politics, but world politics, focuses on all these superficial issues to get people past looking at what's really going on in our world today. You know, why aren't we focusing more on environmental issues, not just drilling for oil and talking about clean energy? I'm talking about, why aren't we planting more trees in the cities? Why aren't we growing gardens in our backyards instead of mowing grass and wasting energy that way? You know, I don't understand why we do the things that we do, but we don't talk about them.
Well, I mean, Matt, what you're saying is very important. This is not the kind of conversation we'd have on this kind of show when we do a lot of seemingly trivial and just, you know, personality politics, things like that. But there's a big part of the administration who is aware of what's going on in the world, the climate change and things like that, and the emissions coming out from companies. So there are, you know, and And there are people who are planting trees and protecting the environment and doing things to fix emissions. Just because we don't talk about it on this show doesn't mean that, you know, NPR or the media or journalists don't care about it. But you know, it's going on there, and it would just be a different kind of show. And I'm not trying to dismiss the importance of what you're saying. It's just that this kind of show is not the kind of thing what we would be talking about. But I don't think people are not doing what you're saying. I just don't think it gets that much attention. And I think more and more people are more attuned to what's going on with the environment, given the fact that the ice caps are melting and things like that.
Yeah, but I feel like if our attention isn't focused there, then the problems aren't going to be solved. And I realize this show is, you know, more of, you know, interesting and good for the conversation, but
well, it's
talking
politics.
About just, it's and just politics in general mm-hmm. is we don't mm-hmm. talk about anything of importance.
It does seem to me, having covered politics for 25 years at the state house level, not at the national level like Ken, but that it is less about policy and more about chessboard moves. That does seem to be the way it is to me. I don't know about you, Ken.
Well, I think it's true only because, I mean, once upon a time, things got done in Congress. Mm-hmm. If you're thinking of all the things that people are talking about now, guns and immigration and again, once again, abortion, as we saw in the House, these are issues that divide the country and certainly need a solution. Certainly with immigration and guns, we need a solution with that. But you know, as Matt says, a lot of us are just talking more about the game and the chess matches. And I think the reason we talk about it so much is because that's exactly what we see in Congress. We see strategy. We see gotcha questions. We see let's see how this helps my party in November. But ultimately, a lot of stuff is not getting done. And that's indisputable.
Matt, thanks a lot for your call. 614-292-8513 or email us at allsides@wosu.org. Jesse in Clintonville, you're on the air.
Hello, how are you guys doing?
Fine, hi. Thank you.
I have a question about the NSA conspiracy thing that's going on right now. I think that Bush put a lot of this stuff in with the Patriot Act. Now we have Obama tapping everybody's phone lines, potentially. I'm wanting to know what you think is going to be the end point for this. When is America going to stop trying to defeat an idea like terrorism? I mean, you know, at what lengths are we going to go to keep, you know, our so-called security? I heard a libertarian talk show host make a comment about drunk driving. You know, we don't have a breathalyzer test every time that you get in your car. You don't have to put a breathalyzer test in your vehicle to get onto the highway. If we did that, we could save, you know, 40,000 lives a year. But we're not willing to do that because it's such an intrusion on our freedom and our privacy. So I'm just curious to know what you think will be the end of this, or if there is one, or if we're just, you know, riding along into a police state.
Well, Jesse, that's a good question. I mean, I saw an editorial cartoon the other day where people were saying that you see the government saying, well, we're going to tap your phones, and the American people say that's fine, and we're going to, you know, eavesdrop on your conversations and your email, and the Americans say they're fine. And then they say, and then you see it says, and we also need background checks to buy a gun, and then you see them screaming, that's an intrusion on our liberty. So, I mean, I think as long as Americans are willing, and polls show this, as long as Americans seem willing to sacrifice some amount of privacy for security, nobody's going to be, you know, waving the flag and saying, what's going on here? You could make the case that, you know, Americans will stop trying to stop terrorism when people stop, you know, having these plots with bombs on their back to cause panic. But as far as, you know, I think it's just unbelievable. This is, you know, when you read novels like 1984 and the famous question, can this happen here? Mm-hmm. But you know, if you looked at the cover of most of the major magazines, news magazine last week, saying, yes, they're bugging us and nobody cares. You know, until somebody cares about this, it'll keep happening. And President Obama you know, will say that here's my defense of why we're doing this. It is, and as long as they say it is, you know, it has solved and stopped many terrorist plots, everybody in the country says, wow, this may be okay. Maybe it's okay to give up a little privacy.
Okay, Jesse, thanks for the call. You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. My guest, Ken Rudin, NPR's political junkie, is with us for the hour. You can call and talk with Ken, 614-292-8513. You can also email us at allsides@wosu.org. We have an email from Lou, who writes, I will certainly miss Ken being on every Wednesday, of course, on Talk of the Nation. Does Ken know if he will be on any of the NPR replacement shows? Will Ann still have him on occasionally?
Well,
and she has a couple other questions, but let's respond to that.
Well, regarding the NPR program, it doesn't look like that. It doesn't look like that's happening. So I am leaving NPR sometime this summer, certainly by the end of September. What I'm looking to do right now, and I'm meeting with member stations around the country right now, is to recreate Political Junkie as a one-hour program, a self-contained one-hour program with the trivia questions and T-shirts and talk to analysts and party people and candidates and journalists, similar to what Neil and I have been doing for the last 6 years, 7 years on Talk of the Nation. So there seem to be a bunch of stations that seem to be very interested in it, and I would love to continue it. Regrettably for me, it will not be part of the NPR network. It won't be on NPR, and it won't be. But hopefully, member stations will pick it up.
Will you get to keep the Political Junkie moniker?
Yeah, that and Scuttlebutt are mine. So
okay.
That will continue.
Okay, and.
And I think, I was going to say the last person who kept the moniker was Bill Clinton, but that's such a bad joke that I won't say it on the air.
Email from Patty. Are there any Political Junkie T-shirts available for purchase? How can I get one?
There are. Once upon a time, they were $24 each at the NPR store. If you go to npr.org you go to the shop, I think it's just look for the shop, S-H-O-P, they are available. Yes, they are available.
Is NPR gouging on them?
Well, we the funny thing is we ordered a second round of them because it was so popular, mm-hmm. and we were giving away not only with the Scuttlebutt winners but the trivia winners that we ordered a whole bunch, and then somebody said, let's cancel Talk of the Nation.
Bad planning on their part. Mm-hmm. Chris in Columbus, you're on the air. Welcome to the show, Chris.
Hi. Yes,
hi.
Thank you for taking my call, as we say. First of all, I got to say I lament the decision of NPR to end Talk of the Nation. I look forward to the program and the Political Junkie segments every week. My first comment has to do with what somebody said earlier while I was waiting. The thing about weeding out the other or stymieing the plans of the other as opposed to stymieing our plans, comparing background checks and this NSA metadata surveillance. It's kind of telling, as far as I can tell, that that's a choice that we make because it doesn't really have to do with us per se. Another thing is, and the reason I called is, it seems to me with a lot of the foolishness that has been going on in Washington on both sides, Ken and Neil, or whomever the host might be, have had to, you know, feign disinterest in the interest of hewing to that nominal neutrality that NPR is supposed to have. And I'm glad to hear that, Ken, you're going to try to get something together on your own. And it wouldn't surprise me if whatever you get together ends up on progressive stations. But I just have to hear how it's been for you to maintain that level of disinterest while you watch what's going on.
Chris, I don't think disinterest is the word you want. It's probably just either nonpartisanship or sanity. But I mean, I'm extremely interested. I just don't take a side. You know something? I don't think it's. I mean, look, there are some things I think are crazy. I mean, I think guns. guns frighten me, but I understand guns, but they frighten me. Cigarettes frighten me. But for the most part, I see the argument for the right, certainly the right to have an abortion, and the argument against abortion. I do see these things. It's not that I've trained myself to be so neutral that I have no opinions, but I do appreciate the political system in which people do have their arguments to make and the things they have to say. And I find myself not, the more I do this, and I've been doing this for a long time, the more I do this, I feel less, I mean, I don't feel like I'm a cheering participant at all. I mean, I haven't felt that way in years. I don't vote in primaries, for example, things like that. But I don't, I'm not pained to keep my mouth quiet because I might lose some sense of fairness. I say what I mean and what's this all about. But I don't. I'm not sitting here saying I wish I could be more vocal.
Thank you, Chris, for that call. Let's try to sneak another quick one back in before we have to take another break. Clay in Columbus, you're on the air. Welcome.
Hey, Ann. Thanks for taking my call.
You're welcome.
Hey, Ken, longtime listener, and I certainly wish you good luck in the future.
Thank you, Clay.
As kind of a fiscal conservative but more liberal socially, I think, and Chris was kind of touching on it, and I'm in my 30s, and I think a lot of people my age and younger feel the same way. I would love your opinion on what can kind of bring both sides back from this political brinkmanship. I mean, it seems like you can't touch on any issue, even some of the ones that an earlier caller said might be, quite frankly, a little more trivial. But just any issue that comes up for political debate or discussion, it just seems like you're on one side or the other. You know, Obamacare, case in point, one side says you're pushing grandma off the cliff. The other side says you're giving welfare recipients Mercedes to drive. I'm just curious what your thoughts are without getting necessarily one side or the other, you know, how we can kind of come back together.
I don't know the answer to that, and I think that's one thing, in answer to Chris's question, what do I think about all the time, that is what I think about, because it just seems like, and we touched upon this a little bit at Talk of the Nation yesterday, when members of the House or Senate, when some of them say that, you know something, why not? I'm going to reach across the aisle. I'm a Democrat. I'm going to reach across to Republicans. I'm a Republican who's going to reach across to Democrats. When that happens, they're immediately threatened with a primary fight. We saw this with Blanche Lincoln in Arkansas, a Democrat who was thought to be too conservative. We see it with Lindsey Graham. We saw it with Richard Lugar in Indiana, who was thought to be too liberal. I mean, there are other reasons why Dick Lugar lost. But it seems like any time a member of Congress tries to, you know, be above politics and tries to just reach across and get something done, they're immediately threatened by either cable TV or a primary candidate. And I think there's very little evidence of profiles and courage with a lot of these members.
Do you think that it's more of a social issue than it is necessarily the way politics are operating today? I mean, it's kind of, you know, the people with, you know, fire torches and pitchforks behind them and the fear of what they're going to do to their constituency. So it's really more our fault?
Well, look, I mean, you know, if people were upset about this, MSNBC and Fox wouldn't have the kind of loyal of followers they do, because people love to stick it to the other side. And, you know, I mean, you know, we always think of the days of Gerald Ford, and of course, anybody who remembers Gerald Ford, you think of him as a bumbler, and he pardoned Nixon.
Wait a minute. I'm from Jerry Ford country.
So. Okay, I'll talk slow. Every time you but the thing is, when you think back about him, he was a decent guy. He was somebody who spent his whole life, first of all, he spent his whole career in the House in the minority, but so he was, and he never had, and the Republicans were never in the majority when he was in Congress, but he worked with Democrats to work something that was good for the country. The civil rights bills were Democrats and Republicans coming together. There was no such thing as, you know, primary battles where they just, you know, were spreading fear among the members of Congress. So I wish for a lot of things. But I don't see how things change. I don't see how things change.
Clay, thanks for your call. We appreciate it.
Thanks, Ann. Good luck, Ken.
Thank you.
My guest is Ken Rudin, NPR's political junkie. We will get to more of your calls and emails. If you want to give us a call, 614-292-8513, or we can take an email. All sides at WOSU.org address, and you can check out our Facebook page if you want. That's pretty quick, too. We'll be right back. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.
Member contributions are the largest source of funding for 89.7 NPR News. Your support provides for the highest quality news and information. Our fiscal year ends on June 30th, and we still have about $50,000 to raise. You can help us meet our annual goal by giving at WOSU.org or by calling 866-897-9678. And thank you for supporting 89.7 NPR News.
Support comes from the Physicians Free Clinic and Voluntary Care Network, providing charity medical care for Central Ohio's uninsured patients. More about joining the Columbus Medical Association Foundation in supporting the clinic is at goodhealthcolumbus.org.
Columbus on the Record brings you the week's top news stories with in-depth, thoughtful, and balanced analysis. From the Ohio State House to Columbus City Hall, WOSU News and Public Affairs Director Mike Thompson and his panel discuss the issues and stories impacting life in Central Ohio. The show goes beyond the headlines to explore all sides of each issue. Watch Columbus on the Record Friday nights at 8:30 on WOSU TV and watch full episodes online at WOSU.org/COTR. You're listening to 89.7 NPR News, your all-day NPR news station. We bring you NPR News every morning and evening, 7 days a week.
Welcome back to All Sides with Ann Fisher. My guest this hour, Ken Rudin, NPR's political junkie. If you have a question or comment for him, give us a call, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. Now, Ken, Lisa Murkowski, third Republican in the United States Senate to come out for gay marriage?
She is.
Is this a trend?
A trend? Well, three out of, what are there, 44 or 43
still
Republicans now? She joins Mark Kirk from Illinois and some guy, Rob Portman,
from Ohio.
From where? Ohio?
Yes.
Ohio, yeah. Yeah. But it's interesting. I mean, she has shown some independence. Of course, remember in 2010, she was beaten in the Republican primary by a Tea Party person and then won as a write-in. So she's been kind of independent. It's not a wave among Republicans, but three is three more than we had a year ago. And if you look at the polls on same-sex marriage, I mean, Hillary Clinton and Barack Obama and Joe Biden, they were all opposed to it not that long ago. So, I mean, as President Obama kept talking about his evolving, I suspect you'll see more and more Republicans evolving as well. Not everybody, and certainly not the more conservative ones. But you know something, once upon a time when we talked about libertarianism was get the government out of the bedroom, get the government out of my private affairs, and let me do what I want. And that theoretically would be, you know, gay rights and abortion and things like that. But that's not that's not the libertarianism of today with a lot of people in that movement.
Randy in Georgia, the state of?
Yeah, yes.
Welcome to the show.
Thank you for taking my call.
Mm-hmm.
Quick question for Ken. The big debate on immigration as far as the border security and the funding for that, my question is why wouldn't they just use, so to speak, like the recruits that just come out of boot camp or even the military to enforce that rather than expand the government with more boots on the ground and hire new border patrol? Why wouldn't they just use the existing military we do have?
I don't know if sequester is part of that, but I think I've seen people raise the fact of a sequester, saying that's impractical, and the governments, both the federal and the state's governments, are just too widely thinned. I don't know. The border fence may not be the most practical thing, but it seems like, if you look at the Obama record on immigration, he has deported more people than I think any previous government combined. Is that possible? Or certainly much more than President Bush.
way more than people really ever talk about.
Oh, I guess. No, I think that that's the long, for the longest mm-hmm. time that was the case. But I mean, you know, I think both sides also realize. I mean, the CBO came out with that story, that study this week that says that the more influx of immigrants, it helps the economy, and you know, there are so many arguments to be made to make people who are here far more productive. But then there's also the argument saying that why should people who are here illegally get in line ahead of the people who have been waiting for years to come here legally.
All right, Randy, thank you for your call. We appreciate it. Let's see. Tony in Columbus, you're on the air. Welcome to the show.
Hi. I have a question about jobs. I thought that...
So do I, by the way.
I thought President Obama was going to make that his priority, and he and the Democrats seem not to be able to focus on that at all, and yet the middle class is shrinking and student loan debt is out of control. I mean, the things that are crushing the middle class just keep, you know, prices are going up. What's happened to jobs as a priority?
Well, that's what a lot of Democrats were saying when President Obama's numbers were really looking bad as we were approaching the 2012 election, and people were saying that why are you spreading yourself too thin with the health care plan, with the immigration overhaul, just work on jobs, which seems to be what the American people care for the most. But we've seen that for the most part, it's not so much what the president can do. Yes, there can be influx of money going to certain industries, but for the most part, it seems very cyclical. And unemployment was very high during the George H.W. Bush administration, and even though it was coming down towards the end, people are already made up their minds about them. But if the president had that power to create all these jobs, I mean, I don't think we've seen anything like that since FDR, that there would be no unemployment. Obama has known from the beginning that his biggest vulnerability is not only the lack of jobs, but people who think that the economy is going to get worse. And I think for all this, the stimulus package and all the plans he tried to do, some of it worked, some of it didn't work. And I assume they're still trying, but I guess the real answer is just because we're focusing on the immigration and health care and guns and like that doesn't mean that there aren't people in the administration trying to come up with some kind of program to increase employment.
The question is, what's in the news? And there's been so much other kinds of news out there. It's not important when it comes to newsworthiness.
Well, it is, except Tony is exactly right. I think everybody cares. Nobody cares more about the future of their economic security, which means jobs and small businesses and things like that. And you could fight about abortion until you're blue in the face, but I still need to support my family. I still need to make a living, mm-hmm. And I think that's why I'm surprised that even if nothing could be done, you might expect, like for example, during the campaign, every time the employment rate would go up or down, or jobs were added or jobs were lost, it was front page news. Since Obama's reelection, you haven't heard it at all. Sometimes you say, well, things are getting better or things are getting worse, but nobody seems to get worked up about it because it's no longer a campaign issue. And that's the saddest commentary of all.
Tony, thanks a lot for that call. We have an email from a listener who wants to know why is Talk of the Nation being taken off the air? So many of NPR listeners love the show, and I haven't heard any reasons for the decision. Was a survey taken, and NPR supporters are not in favor of the show? Has Clear Channel reached its fingers of control around NPR also?
Nothing to do with Clear Channel. First of all, I should tell you that the numbers for Talk of the Nation were higher than they ever were, ever in its 21-year history. It was getting more and more member stations all the time. And every time I would travel and give speeches on behalf of NPR, people would just tell me how much they love NPR. It seems like there were a bunch of member stations that had their own talk shows, and they didn't want some powerful member stations had their own talk shows, and they didn't want to have a national talk show as well. So I think part of it was also money. So these member stations are backing Here and Now, this program that's produced by WBUR in Boston, which is kind of like a magazine show that'll be pitched in between Morning Edition and All Things Considered. And it does save NPR money, and it allows the other stations to keep their own talk shows while creating their own local focused show. But I mean, look, my feelings about this are clear and well known. I just think that Talk of the Nation talked to people, said things about the events that nobody else did, and Neil Conan, for when there was breaking news, nobody is better than Neil Conan for getting a handle on what's happening, what it means to you and your family, and how does this get resolved in any kind of breaking news. You know, his first day on Talk of the Nation was September 10th, 2001, the day before the horror. So I mean, it was baptism by fire. But Neil's career, this network, has been decades, and it breaks my heart.
He will be missed. Yes, you, on the other hand,
I won't be missed.
Well,
you,
okay. You're not going away.
No, I'm
you're trying not to go away.
You know what Neil is doing? I don't know if anybody's.
No.
Neil has bought a macadamia nut farm. I'm not making this up. In Hawaii.
Really?
Yes, he is. He is. And that's what he's going to do. I mean, he may have an ISDN line in his office.
Well, I would go out there and visit him. Wouldn't he be happy? Except that my husband's allergic to macadamia nuts. So, you know, lucky Neil. Wow, seriously? Dead serious.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
Okay, folks, you heard it here. We have a few more minutes left with Ken Rudin, 614-292-8513. You can email us at allsides@wosu.org. And where I'm trying to get some people. Okay. Anar in Columbus, you're on the air. Welcome. Hi, Anar.
Hello. Thanks, Ann. Thanks for taking my call. And Ken, I'm a big-time fan.
Thank you so much.
I want to know which side of the history is our Congress is in. When Snowden released the info, we are going after breaching national security. And also, when government is tapping our phone calls, oh, yeah, it is legitimate because there are some issues related to the national security. But when Eric Holder investigated some of the reports from the Associated Press, we were saying, oh, it's we are intruding the freedom of press. I want to know, is that a hypocrisy or is it all legitimate? Now we dropped even investigating Eric Holder because of the other two news popped up. I'll take your answer, Ken. Thank you.
Before you go away, I'm not exactly sure what you're asking. Are you saying that, look, we know that there have been investigations into journalists, and we know that the AP, among others, and James Rosen of Fox News.
They were using phone records.
Phone records, right. But what are you saying about the hypocrisy? What's the hypocrisy?
Yeah, because, when Snowden released the information, then we are investigating. We want to know why Snowden had all this information, and also it is breaching national security. But Eric Holder did the same thing, saying that it is going to breach the national security. That's why he captured all those news from the AP. So now we can investigate one, and we are going to say the other one, hey, it is breaching national security. Eric Holder did the same thing and said, hey, it is breaching national security. I want to take this news from AP. But then Congress Oversight Committee said that we want to investigate Eric Holder for that. Hmm. Why did he take this info from AP?
Okay.
Yeah, I don't know what to handle that.
Congress is, in a bipartisan way, supporting the NSA in gathering this metadata in the way that it has, and criticizing or condemning Snowden for releasing the information. Eric Holder, the Attorney General's office, the Justice Department was investigating, using phone records to investigate possible leaks through the Associated Press, and they were condemned by Congress. And Congress is investigating Eric Holder for that. Do you see the tangent? Ken, Ken, you're speechless. Wait.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, look at it.
I don't know, Anar, if I got it straight or not, but that's what I think he was saying. So, Ken is speechless.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know.
All right.
I'm sorry.
Okay. Let's see. Let's see if we can squeeze in one. Bill in Columbus, you're on the air with Ken Rudin. Welcome.
Hi, Ken. This is kind of a silly question, but I'm aware of a future congressional race. It's actually out in California where I used to live and spend a lot of time, where the son of a very famous political family, Panetta, Leon Panetta, whom I know, is probably going to go up against the grandson of William Packard, who is the young man is the current mayor of Carmel. He's very gifted, and he's obviously got a lot of resources. What's your take on when two people clash like that, when one has a lot of resources and a name, and the other one has a great political background and name?
Well, it certainly will attract. I wasn't aware of this race, and I'm glad you pointed this out, and it's something obviously I'll be looking at. What I like about this, I understand that money can buy. Look, it depends. Money can buy an election, and sometimes celebrity can buy an election. But remember, speaking of Ohio, when John Glenn first ran for the Senate, everybody thought he'd be a walkaway winner. And he lost to Howard Metzenbaum because he was seen as more of a celebrity and not somebody like Metzenbaum who, you know, knocked on doors and made all these extensive campaign events. So, certainly it's a kind of a race which will bring national attention. Leon Panetta is one of the few people on the planet, let alone in politics, that both parties just love and adore because he's such a good guy.
And he is, and his son is a DA right now, so he's in public service.
Is this going to be an open seat, or is
not yet. The current incumbent is a fellow named Sam Farr, who's already announced the fact that he's going to run for one more term, and then he's going to retire.
That's something I'd love to watch.
It'll be interesting.
But look, you think of the Mary Bonos of the world, the guy on Love Boat. I mean, sometimes all you need is a little celebrity, and you wind up in Congress, which is pretty remarkable.
That's true. Well, thanks for your take.
Thanks, Bill.
Thanks, okay. Bill. Ken Rudin, you've promised that you won't forget us.
Who is this?
No matter what happens, you promised.
I would love to come back on your show.
Okay, Ken Rudin, he's still NPR's political junkie for one more week, as long as Talk of the Nation is on the air. And we are definitely sad to see you go in that respect, but we are so glad that you'll still continue to spend some time with us.
I'm thrilled, too. Thanks, Ann.
Thank you for your time today. Thanks to Ken Rudin, NPR's political junkie, and thanks to everybody for listening, for your questions and comments. We appreciate all of them. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.